you've ever been in an empty theater when the lights are down, you've probably noticed a singular light standing on the stage. That's called the ghost light. While its original purpose has been debated, it is most commonly used to keep people from accidentally bumping into things or stumbling off the stage. Theater people, however, are a famously superstitious bunch, and as nearly every theater has its share of ghost stories, the ghost light has morphed over time into either a deterrent or beacon, depending on who you ask, to the spirits dwelling in the theater. I'm your host, Riley, and on this episode of Life on College Hill, our guests, Renee Cox.
I never felt comfortable. I always felt like there was some kind of presence there.
And Andrew Nichols.
I don't know what that was, but I don't want to be possessed, so...
Give us a peek through the curtains and into the story of RSU's very own haunted theater. If you take a stroll toward the east side of RSU's main campus, you'll find nestled among the trees and red brick buildings a sleek, somewhat stern example of 1930s architecture. A square gray Art Deco structure, all sharp angles and smooth concrete, bearing the word auditorium across its front. Since 2005, it has been the home of RSU's much-loved and often beleaguered theater program. If you walk through the double doors, across the entry hall, and down into the theater proper, you'll find neat rows of red folding seats, a damp, mildewy smell, and the stage. Beneath the auditorium, however, is where things get interesting, for there, underground, lies the setting of our story, a Cold War-era bomb shelter known ominously as the Bunker.
And yes, since the very beginning, when I started here in 2005, any time that I spent in that auditorium, on the upper level, I was fairly comfortable, on the upper level being the stage area. But down in the bunker, I immediately was never comfortable being down in the bunker. The reason I had to be down in the bunker is because that's where we stored all of our theater stock, our costumes, wigs, hats, props, set pieces.
That's Renee Cox, English professor and, from 2005 to current, costume designer for the theater program.
So I had to spend a lot of time down there, also spent a lot of time just organizing it and setting it up to be functional for us. And I never felt comfortable. I always felt like there was some kind of presence there, that I wasn't there alone. Sometimes it was bearable, but I would have to kind of almost like psych myself up for several days in a row in preparation of going down into that space. Sometimes I could stay down there once I got myself, you know, convinced to go down there. Sometimes I could stay quite comfortably for several hours, but then there were other times when I could only stay for 10 or 15 minutes because it just felt, for whatever reason, more intense than it did on other days.
While her initial method for soothing herself during those isolated hours underground was to turn NPR on the radio, she eventually began taking a more direct approach.
I started talking to it. Whenever I would go down into the auditorium, at the base of the stairs, I would just say out loud to the space, I would say, "It's just me. I'll just be here for a couple minutes. I need to get some wigs, and then I'll be on my way." And for some reason, just saying that helped me, like, reconcile with the way the space felt.
Miss Cox, however, was not alone in picking up this, looking from the outside, rather peculiar habit. As the former auditorium and media supervisor at the school, Andrew Nichols, by necessity, spent a lot of time in the theater after hours, time which, according to him, was not spent alone.
So there would be times when I'd be working late or getting out late, and I would not get out of the auditorium until like maybe 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. And when campus is dead and there's nothing there and you don't have anything else, sometimes what I would do is go into that auditorium, It's peaceful. It's incredibly peaceful. I leave something. Are you aware of a ghost light? Okay. So what I would do is, sometimes I would actually sit down, like on stage, and just stare off into the audience, and I would say, I know this sounds bizarre, but like I would say, I'm not here to hurt you. I really don't know who it is or what it is that's here, but I'm not here to hurt you. I'm not here to cause anything at all.
Neither Ms. Cox nor Mr. Nichols reported receiving any responses from the entity they believed to be present. And perhaps you're thinking, now this isn't much of a ghost story, just an old empty building and some overactive imaginations. But I assure you, that's all about to change. Don't go away.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth, president of the Student Broadcasting Association.
I'm Sky, vice president, and we're gearing up for
Chill Out 2024. Chill Out includes games, food, prizes, and live performances from local artists.
Featuring People Call Me Josie, Catlock, and Swim Fan.
Located on the DCTC patio at the RSU Claremore campus
on Tuesday, April 9th at 5:30 p.m.
The first 50 people get a free Chill Out t-shirt.
Be there for a glowing evening you won't forget.
Open the door. See what you find.
A mixed bag of British music right when you want it.
I love it.
Britwave proves the sky is not the limit. Tuesdays at 12 and Thursday nights at 8 on 91.3 FM RSU Radio.
I would apologise, but I'm not going to.
Something many students today don't know is that the History and Political Science Department was originally housed beneath the auditorium in the bunker. It was eventually abandoned, however, in favor of the newly renovated Baird Hall in 2010. In the years following, Ms. Cox and Mr. Nichols spent many hours down there with the mold and dust attempting to clean and organize the space. But in spite of these intrusions, the bunker lay mostly silent and undisturbed for years, until something began to shift.
So, in 2016, Andrew Nichols and I spent multiple weeks through June and July down there, the most time that we'd spent down there together, multiple days in a row. I'd say we were spending, on average, from Monday through Friday, we were spending anywhere from 5 to 8 hours in that bunker. And we did just a massive cleaning project. We gathered up trash. We moved things from one room to another. We were bleaching the floors. I was wiping down the walls with vinegar. And we disrupted and changed everything, every single room we got into and changed it in some way, as we were just reorganizing things around. And Andrew had been playing his iPhone. He had music, saved on his iPhone. So we had been listening to music and singing and kind of joking and laughing. And again, not only physically changing the space, but changing the space in terms of energy, because we'd been there for multiple days in a row. And then toward the end of July, I actually remember the date because it just happened to be my brother's birthday. So July 24th, 2016, we were down there in an inner room that used to be Dr. Hatley's office. I was facing the doorway looking out into the larger open space. Andrew was behind me with his back to me because he was taking out some stuff that we had prior set into the wall to support a garment rack. So we were dismantling that. I was moving a small bookshelf, and I moved the bookshelf, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw movement.
Renee just stops, and she doesn't move.
So, of course, I looked up, and what I saw, about 5 feet in front of me, glided past me, directly in front of me. It was in profile, from about mid-chest area up, So no discernible form or shape from like mid-chest down. But in profile, glided past me from about chest, mid-chest, all the way up to the top of the head, a white form. Pretty opaque, not necessarily transparent, more solid than you would expect. Mm-hmm. Kind of a shimmery white, but slightly blurred. like if you painted the form of a human being in profile in white paint on a wall, and then like if you took a clean paintbrush and like smeared that paintbrush backward, very graceful. So not with a normal human gait, you know? And it went past me, and of like a million thoughts processed through my mind in like a fraction of an instant. Because my first thought was someone was down here with us. But then as I saw the form, you know, I was aware that it was only a quarter of a human form, that there was nothing from the mid-chest down. And between the way it looked, the way it moved, it was like I instantly knew it was a human entity, but obviously it was not a human being. And it kind of dissolved as it passed in front of me. I probably had eyes on it for maybe 3 seconds, maybe 3.5 seconds, and then it kind of dissolved. And this whole time, I love Andrew so much. This whole time, Andrew, who's behind me, he's just been yapping away about something. I don't know. He had no idea that the whole thing had even happened because his back was to me. He was facing the opposite direction. And so I kind of just walked toward him, and I'm sure my eyes must have been just as big as saucers because he looked sideways. He looked at me, and he stopped in mid-sentence when he saw my face. He stopped, and he must have known because, you know, he's experienced things in that auditorium. So he just stopped and he looked at me and he goes, "What?" And I said, "Andrew, it's okay. We're okay, but we are not alone down here right now."
And about that time, I took out my cross that I wear and I just kissed it real quick. Well, because I don't know what that was, but I don't want to be possessed.
It was really adorable. And he said, "We're okay, we're okay." And I said, "Yeah, we're definitely okay." But then I pointed, I was like, "I just saw him." And I said him, pretty sure I said him. I said, "I just saw it. He just floated by." And he was kind of like, okay. So then we talked about it. And one of his first questions was, did it feel hostile? Did it feel angry or hostile or aggressive in any way? And it most definitely did not. It's a weird thing to say, but it felt almost not quite flirty, but it felt playful. Like it was letting us know that it was there too.
I agree with that because it wasn't, I don't think it was a vengeful spirit. Mm-hmm. I think what it was I think that it was one of two things. One, it was curious. Okay. It was curious because, you know, they wanted to, like, the spirit, whoever it was just curious to see who we are. You know, because ghosts and the living can't really hurt each other. All right, they can scare each other. Ghosts can scare the living more than they can the dead. But this one was just curious. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that I think it was really trying to contact the outside world. And for what reason, I have no idea.
While the entity, whoever, or indeed whatever they may be, certainly doesn't seem interested in menacing or harming anyone, a question remains, one which, at least at time of recording, has no definitive answer. Why, after so many years of tense silence, would it choose to reveal itself at this particular time to these particular people?
My theory is that I think that our auditorium entity is attracted to Andrew's energy. Because all those hours, weeks, months, years that I was down in the bunker, it never revealed itself to me. But when Andrew was down there with me, that was the moment that it chose to let itself be seen. I think that entity was interacting with Andrew. Because Andrew has a wonderful energy. He has a very warm, open, very joyful, very sincere vibe. I just think that there's something about Andrew's energy that brings it around. But also, we had disrupted that space so thoroughly for weeks on end that could also have something to do with it.
Yeah.
You know? Or maybe if entities draw energy off of people, we had been down there for so many days in a row and it was both of us. Mm-hmm. That if it is something that draws energy in order for it to reveal itself or to be seen or interact or whatever, that was a phase of time when there had been plenty of energy for it to draw off of. Because normally what would happen is one person would go down there for a few minutes at a time, and then weeks, it would be empty again. You know, no right. one down there, nothing happening. And then someone would be in there for a couple hours by themselves and then gone. You know, so I wondered if maybe it was so many weeks on end, so many hours per day of us being down there, that maybe that was something that it used to manifest.
I think ghosts do things differently, like to try to make themselves aware or try to make themselves known. Mm-hmm. And I think they respond differently to different people.
And I mean, I even hesitate to speak about this on record because I don't want people to hear it and then decide to go over to the auditorium and see if they can mess around.
I do feel that theaters in any way are sacred places. You know, you think of the theater as like a church. Okay? Think of the theater as like a church. Mm. And if you think of that, you know, if you think of that, that's where people come to harbor like all types of emotions, all types of feelings and whatnot. And I spent a lot of time in that theater. And I had a genuine love for it. Maybe that's why if at any at all possible, I would say that's probably why they were attracted to me. Mm-hmm. Was that I had respect for it. I had respect for it, and I also had respect really for the dead.
A couple people I've spoken to since I've told them about what I've seen and witnessed down there, they're like, well, why don't you go back and, you know, like take a Ouija board? And I'm like, because that's stupid. Like, I'm not gonna mess with it in that way, you know?
Yeah.
I think doors can be opened that you probably shouldn't be messing with.
The one thing I feel about that is that, like, when it comes to spirits in general, I'm curious about that stuff, so I kind of accept it. Mm. The only thing I can say is that have respect for it. Don't go in there and try to wrestle something up, and don't try to conjure something that, you know, you shouldn't be conjuring. Like, don't take a Ouija board in there.
I definitely believe that respect and humility is, you know, the only way that you should approach something like this.
I know it's old. I know it has. It's got its own trouble, it's got its own problems, but, you know, it's a building with a lot of history, and I treated it with respect. A lot of the people that were in there treated it with respect, and I hope that people that go in there also treat it with respect, because that's about the only thing you can really do.
While Andrew Nichols left his position at RSU in 2023, Renee Cox continues to work with the theater department. Though her work no longer takes her into the bunker as often as it once did, she says she feels at peace knowing the entity is down there and hopes it isn't too lonely. I hope, dear listener, If you take anything away from this episode, it is a healthy respect for those places where the past remains tangible, and for the souls, living or otherwise, who may call them home. Subscribe to Life on College Hill on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever other fine podcasts are offered, so you never miss an episode. Thank you for listening.